session, please be seated.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Chief Justice. Not yet. Last 2 minutes. Just want to let you know I'm awake. Court is always correct. It's my pleasure today to introduce my colleague Eric Leon from the Kirkland & Ellis firm. Well, with the court's permission, we'll be making the argument for the appellate. Whatever your wife says.
Good day of work.
With me at council table for the appellant is Arthur Sussman of the Sussman Watkins & Wiley firm. He'll be making the argument for the appellant. Thank you, Your Honor.
Welcome. May it please the court, there is an everyday analog which I think should control the analysis of this case. Let's assume that I want to sell my house and I employ a real estate broker to do so. The real estate broker has no discretion. I have full discretion as to whether or not I sell the house and to whom. A potential buyer pays $10,000 to the real estate broker to promote him as the buyer, and it's a fair price, and I consummate the transaction with the buyer. I don't think there's anyone here who will come to the conclusion other than that $10,000 should be turned over to the seller, to me, the principal of the agent. Any consideration received in that in my hypothetical is in effect a commercial bribe. And the common law has, for hundreds of years, prevented that sort of thing. It's a breach of fiduciary duty. It can be ratified, but only after full disclosure. And if there is no disclosure, then it's a breach, and that money should be turned over to the principal. That's precisely what happened here. In connection with the sale of a business, Morgan Stanley recommended to its customers that they sell an underlying investment, an investment that they had, i.e., the sweep accounts, to the Harris people, the Bank of Montreal people. And they received, Morgan Stanley received consideration for that recommendation and the effectuation of that recommendation. This has nothing to do with the sale. This is the recommendation of an underlying investment that their customers had. It's as though Morgan Stanley decided that they were going to recommend that the customers sell all their IBM stock to the Harris Bank of Montreal people and forgot to tell the customers that, in fact, the Bank of Montreal people had paid them some consideration for making that recommendation. That's exactly what happened here. It's controlled by Evren. This court has already addressed this issue several years ago in an identical situation. In
this case, the Court of Chancery distinguished it. Why was the distinction they tried to make incorrect? They tried to make the distinction between Delaware law, California law, traditional fiduciary duty
yes.
to stockholders, and
yes.
fiduciary duty in this case.
Well, there are really three elements to the answer to that question. First of all, this court follows Section 187 of the Restatement of Conflicts when it comes to the analysis of choice of laws in contracts. There is a choice of laws in this contract, and it chooses California, but it's a red herring. The California law, first of all, is the same as Delaware law. A commercial bribe is unacceptable. I can't think of any common law jurisprudence that would permit that sort of thing. Once you decide that there is a fiduciary relationship or an agency relationship and the matter falls within that, within the relationship, then there must be an accounting by the fiduciary to the cessuee for all money received in connection with the recommendation being made. California is no different than Delaware, but let's assume that California was different and a commercial bribe was acceptable in California. Well, there are two steps to the analysis of 187. First of all, is there some sort of connection between the choice of laws that the parties made and the state whose choice or the country whose choice was chosen? And in this case, they chose California, but we don't know what the connection with California really was. There is no factual development. But let's assume, for purposes of argument, that in fact there are Morgan Stanley's online business was headquartered in California, despite the fact that Morgan Stanley is in New York and New Jersey. Then we come to the second step of the analysis under 187. And the second step is the law of the state that was chosen so repugnant to the law of the state of the forum, i.e. Delaware, that that portion of California's law wouldn't be enforced? I submit to you that if California permits commercial bribes and breaches of fiduciary duty of this nature, that is extremely repugnant to the well-developed law in Delaware with respect to breaches of fiduciary duty of loyalty, which is the duty involved here. And it wouldn't be enforced under the Section 187 Restatement of Conflicts analysis, which this court has adopted to help it sort out these sort of problems. And lastly, there really is no factual development to show that there is any rational relationship between the contract choice of laws and the transaction here. Now, of course, this is a motion to dismiss with all its, I needn't tell you what
that was. The premise seems to be that this is a commercial bribe, but distinguish a commercial bribe from the sale or assignment of rights under a contract. I mean, why isn't it the latter?
Well, you have really two transactions here. You have the sale of the business, the online business of Morgan Stanley, to the Harris people, the Bank of Montreal people. And we make no complaint about that whatsoever. Then you have the second transaction, and that is a recommendation of the sale of the underlying investments that the customers of Morgan Stanley had. I'm a customer of Morgan Stanley. I have a portfolio of IBM, AT&T, GM, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, including the securities of a mutual fund called Alliance Money Market Fund. Those are securities, just like IBM, et cetera, et cetera. They have recommended to me that I sell those securities. And it is that transaction that's the heart of this complaint, and that's what gives rise to the breach of fiduciary duty. It's got nothing to do with the sale of the business. The confusion, and that's the confusion of Vice Chancellor Strine in his opinion. He confused the sale of the business with the recommendation to sell the underlying investment that the customer owned. Completely different. And we don't complain anything about the sale of the business. Have I responded adequately? Okay. Another argument that the defendants make is that because the duty of loyalty is not specified in the contract, that there is none. Well, the contract establishes the relationship, but fiduciary duties are established by the common law. They are in the penumbra of the agreement, and they arise from the relationship itself. It's really just the opposite. The fiduciary duty of loyalty applies unless there's something in the contract that negates it, and then, even then sometimes you can't negate it merely by agreement.
How would you characterize what Harris paid for in the first transaction that you're not contesting?
At this point, without any discovery whatsoever, it's a motion to dismiss, we do not know how much they paid for the recommendation.
Okay, what did they get in return for whatever they did?
They got control over the investment advisory fees and other fees that were generated by $1.4 to $1.5 billion in assets. Those investment advisory contracts are bought and sold. There is a market for these things. There are rules of thumb. Experts evaluate them. because this is a motion to dismiss, I can read you chapter and verse from the complaint where we say they got consideration.
Well, my question is trying to ask the question based on the response of your opponent, and a little bit on what the Court of Chancery said, which is they basically bought what was in existence, and they were hoping that once they bought it, the momentum would stay with them, and when people wanted to reinvest, they wouldn't go elsewhere, but they'd stay with the new buyer. And in both the Court of Chancery opinions and your opponent's brief, they say, to the extent you're complaining now, it's implicit that they would be purchasing what they hoped would be momentum in their favor.
Maybe that's what they hoped, and I'm sure that's what they paid for. But, for example, not all of the underlying investments, customers' investments of Morgan Stanley were so transferred. There were some sweep accounts that couldn't be transferred because there wasn't another like fund that the Harris people had created yet. And it's true that it is I suppose it's a hope that this recommendation of Morgan Stanley would be honored and accepted by their customers, but nevertheless, they got paid for making that recommendation, just like the real estate broker in my hypothetical got payment for recommending the buyer of my house. It's the same analogy.
That is the problem, that there is really discrete, identifiable, separate consideration for the recommendation. And you had a very practical example. Let's suppose anybody sells a business, and the buyer hopes that they're going to retain the customers. So we have one big price, and somewhere in the agreement it says, you'll use your best efforts to encourage your customers to stay with us. Would that be a problem?
No, because, there might be, but depending on the business. But there is no fiduciary relationship between the ordinary businessman and his customers. That's an arm's length transaction. But here we have a fiduciary relationship, an agent and a principal, or a fiduciary, or a part fiduciary and principal. What makes this case different from Evren is, in Evren, there was a discrete payment set forth. Here, the payment is bundled in the payment for the business. It was hidden. But nevertheless, I can't believe, and I don't think you have to leave your common sense at the door, I don't believe that an ultra-sophisticated organization like Morgan Stanley or the Bank of Montreal people would not know that giving advice to $1.4 or $1.5 billion wasn't worth money. It can be valued just like any other business. It generates cash. You evaluate it just like any other business. So that it was bundled together is a distinction that I don't think was a difference. Actually, I've covered everything, and I think that unless you guys have any questions, I think that the decision below should be reversed and the matter sent back for calculation of the consideration that is paid.
Thank you very much.
May it please the Court, my name is Eric Leon. I represent the appellees Morgan Stanley and Harris Direct. I'd like to cover 3 points today, the first of which is that plaintiff, notwithstanding what you heard here today, has failed to state a claim against Morgan Stanley for breach of fiduciary duty under California law. In dismissing this claim, the Chancery Court applied California law, and we believe correctly so.
Now, is California law different than Delaware law?
California law clearly has addressed the situation present here, where a customer has a non-discretionary account. And in those situations, California has made clear that a broker on this non-discretionary account has very narrow fiduciary duties. The only duty the broker has in that situation is to faithfully execute the customer's transactions. So under California law, what we'd be dealing with is creating a brand new fiduciary duty that has never existed in the non-discretionary circumstance that we have here. And that's really the crux of the matter. And so once you get to California law, we believe the analysis, as I will discuss, is relatively straightforward. Second point I would like to discuss is, even if this court were to look to Delaware law, and in particular the Everett decisions that we've heard about and read about in plaintiff's briefs, the result would be exactly the same. There is no suggestion in Everin or any other case in Delaware to the effect that a broker breaches its fiduciary duties by selling accounts to another broker. Finally, the last point I'd like to touch upon is that, as with the fiduciary duty claim, plaintiff has not come close to stating a claim for aiding and abetting against Harris Direct.
Well, let's look at the second part. When you sell the account, I assume you give notice to your client or customer. You say, I've sold the account. And then the customer says, well, what should I do? Should I stick with these new people or should I go somewhere else? And if you're being paid consideration to say, I think you ought to stick with the people I sold to, is that something that should be disclosed? Well, assume what I've just asked you is a hypothetical.
And let me try to relate it to the facts in this case to make it less hypothetical. The way it works is Morgan Stanley agreed to sell 150,000 accounts to Harris Direct, and then Morgan Stanley got out of the online brokerage business. Very different situation than Everin. And what Morgan Stanley did, and you talked about the disclosure to clients, and I think that's important here, is Morgan Stanley sent out a letter to its clients saying, we have sold your accounts to Harris Direct. Here are the critical components of their transaction. And if your honors would, I would refer you to the letter that plaintiff's counsel keeps referring to as, quote, the recommendation, as though it's some type of
barrier to communication.
It's at Appendix 84 and 85. And if you look at that letter, what you see is it's not a standalone recommendation about sweep accounts. It's a letter that describes chapter and verse every component of the lawful sale of accounts from Morgan Stanley to Harris Direct. And the one paragraph that they're complaining about is paragraph 5 at the top of page 85. That's the recommendation that we keep hearing about. And as you'll see, it's one paragraph in a two-page single-spaced letter. And the reason that's disclosed, according to plaintiff's counsel, is, aha, there must have been a bribe, because otherwise Morgan Stanley would never put in the information about the conversion of sweep accounts. Actually, Your Honors, there is a much more innocent explanation as to why Morgan Stanley sent this letter to its clients. And again, the explanation comes from the customer agreement. And in particular, I would refer you to Appendix page 47, and it's paragraph 9C of the customer agreement. And it says that Morgan Stanley may assign its rights and duties to any third party, as it did in this case. There's no dispute that Morgan Stanley was allowed to sell its accounts, but only upon prior written notice to its customers. And that's what this, quote, recommendation letter that they keep referring to is. It is prior written notice to our customers of the various components of the sale from Morgan Stanley to Harris Direct, which plaintiffs themselves acknowledge was perfectly lawful. So that's the reason that we see this letter. It's because the contract required. It's not because of a bribe or kickback or anything else. It's because had we not sent this letter, I can guarantee you we would be in here defending a breach of contract claim for non-disclosure to our clients. I hope that answers your question, Your Honor.
Yes, thank you.
Let me now turn back to why we believe that the Chancery Court was right to apply California law in this case. General rule in Delaware that Delaware courts will enforce a choice of law provision as long as the state whose law is chosen has material connection to the dispute. But we think that California more than satisfies the material relationship test in this case. First, in the customer agreement that we just referred to, it specifically provides that the customer agreement is deemed to have been made in the state of California. And that's page 47 of the appendix, paragraph 9H. Second, Morgan Stanley's online brokerage is in fact, or was in fact, headquartered in California. Now, plaintiffs suggest that there's nothing in the record to support this conclusion. Respectfully, we disagree. We believe, again, the support comes directly from the customer agreement. And if you look at the back cover of the customer agreement, and I'm at page 56 of the appendix, it gives a California address for Morgan Stanley's online brokerage business. So we have a customer agreement that by its own terms was entered into in California, and we have an online brokerage business that was headquartered in California. Respectfully, either one of these factors standing alone is enough to give California a material relationship to this dispute. The next question, once you get past that threshold hurdle, is the choice of law provision in the customer agreement broad enough to encompass plaintiff's claim for breach of fiduciary duty? And again, the answer is clearly yes. In fact, that is exactly what the California Supreme Court found in the Nedloyd case. The choice of law clause in Nedloyd stated that the party's agreement shall be governed and construed in accordance with Hong Kong law. And the California Supreme Court, sitting en banc, said that this language was more than broad enough to encompass a claim for breach of fiduciary duty. If you look at the choice of law clause in this case, it's even broader. It says that the rights and liabilities of the parties shall be determined in accordance with California law. So under the clear teaching of Nedloyd, plaintiff's claim for breach of fiduciary duty falls squarely within the scope of the California choice of law clause and the customer agreement. Now, if we're under a world where California law governs, and we believe that's the right analysis, the question to whether or not Morgan Stanley owed a fiduciary duty to plaintiffs is readily answered, and the answer is no. The starting point for determining the scope of Morgan Stanley's fiduciary duties under California law is, of course, the customer agreement. And to be clear, we are not saying that the customer agreement sets forth the specific duties that Morgan Stanley may or may not owe to its customers. What we are saying is that the agreement sets forth the scope of the agency relationship between Morgan Stanley and its customers. And it's that agency relationship that in turn defines the scope of Morgan Stanley's fiduciary duties. I said at the outset, and plaintiffs have not disputed it in argument or in the briefs, plaintiff's account was non-discretionary. And there is not a single case anywhere in California where a California court has found that a broker breached a fiduciary duty in the context of a non-discretionary account. In fact, as I said, broker's only duty in the context of a non-discretionary account is to faithfully execute a client's transactions. There is no allegation in this case that Morgan Stanley breached this duty, and under California law, that is the end of the inquiry. Take a step back. What plaintiff is really asking this court to do in this case is to create a new freestanding fiduciary duty that has never existed under California law. But, Your Honors, we respectfully submit that on the facts of this case, there is no compelling reason to do that. Remember, this is not a case where plaintiff is alleging that he suffered any type of injury. Plaintiff is not in here claiming that he lost any money whatsoever as a result of the transfer of his sweep accounts from the Alliance funds that Morgan Stanley was linked to the Harris Direct funds that the Harris Direct brokerage was linked to. And it's important to remember, we know that plaintiff's accounts were transferred over from Morgan Stanley's funds to Harris Direct funds in July of 2002. Plaintiff kept his accounts, including the sweep accounts, in the Harris Direct funds until November of 2003. And during all that time, there's no allegation that plaintiff lost a single penny as a result of using the Harris Direct funds. So really, plaintiff is not asking this court to help him address any sort of injury. Instead, what this plaintiff is asking this court to do is to fashion a new remedy to allow him to share in the proceeds that Morgan Stanley received upon the sale of its online accounts to Harris Direct. In other words, this plaintiff is asking this court to help him reap a windfall. And respectfully, that is not the type of situation that cries out for the creation of a new fiduciary duty. As I mentioned at the outset,
do you have a direct response to the real estate commission analogy that was given?
Sure. I have two responses. First, we have a contract in this case that specifically allows Morgan Stanley to sell the accounts that it did to to Harris Direct. Second, if you want to talk about whatever the contract may have been in the hypothetical that we had, we have to assume that the buyer in that case, that the real estate agent in that case was contracted with the obligation to find a buyer. So when we start talking about a potential buyer paying a bribe to a real estate agent, that is going to be something that I would presume would fall squarely within the scope of the real estate agent's fiduciary duties, because that's within the scope of the agency. Here, there's no question that Morgan Stanley had a very narrow agency relationship and therefore very narrow fiduciary duties, and the sale of accounts didn't come anywhere close to the scope of Morgan Stanley's fiduciary duties. And I would also reiterate that, again, I don't know what contract they're envisioning in their hypothetical, but we do know that everything that happened here, the letter that went out to clients, the sale of accounts from Morgan Stanley to Harris Direct, was squarely contemplated and agreed to by plaintiff in the customer agreement. And Your Honor, this brings me to an important point, and it's the next point I want to address. That is, even if you want to look at Delaware law, which we don't think is the right answer here, but even if you do that, you get to exactly the same result in this case. Plaintiff has tried very hard to pigeonhole this case into the Evren decisions. Respectfully, this case has nothing in common with Evren. In his briefs, plaintiff continually uses the term the switch. And if you look at the transaction in Evren, it really was a switch. The broker in Evren did not sell any brokerage accounts. The broker in Evren did not exit the brokerage business. All that the broker in Evren did was to switch its client sweep account assets from one money market fund to another money market fund. That was the full extent of the transaction in Evren. And in return for that switch, the broker in Evren received a 20% interest in a joint venture and the opportunity to get a much greater ownership interest depending on how many clients went along with the switch. As a result of the transaction, the broker in Evren guaranteed itself a future income stream from its ongoing clients' accounts by virtue of the advisory fees that plaintiff's counsel referred to. On those unique facts, this court had every right to be concerned about self-dealing by the broker. The broker was moving around the assets of its ongoing customers to make a profit for itself. Respectfully, if you look at the transaction in this case, according to plaintiff's own allegations, it was not a switch. The transaction in this case was a sale. Morgan Stanley didn't just move its client sweep account assets from one fund to another. Morgan Stanley sold 150,000 accounts to Harris Direct, and then Morgan Stanley exited the online brokerage business. That was the full extent of the transaction in this case. Morgan Stanley had no ongoing interest whatsoever in its clients' accounts. And there is nothing in Evren or any other Delaware decision that suggests that a broker breaches its fiduciary duty by selling accounts to another broker, particularly not when the customer agreement in place specifically contemplates such a transaction. Let me also suggest that there's a very compelling policy reason for not reading Evren as broadly as plaintiff's counsel is suggesting in this case. If we were to adopt plaintiff's reading of Evren, it would effectively mean that every time there's a sale of brokerage accounts, there is a breach of fiduciary duty. Because the commercial reality is that each brokerage is linked to only one fund family for purposes of providing sweep accounts to its customers. Broker A would be linked to the Acme funds. In this case, Morgan Stanley was linked to Alliance funds. Harris Direct was linked to its Harris Insight funds. And under 2510, whenever a broker acquires accounts, brokers allowed to shift the sweep accounts into whatever money market fund the broker chooses, which is normally the money market fund the broker is linked to. So invariably, whenever you have a sale of accounts, you have a switch and sweep account asset. And under plaintiff's reading of Evren, every time that happens, there is a breach of fiduciary duty. Your Honor, that is not what Evren said. Evren deals with the limited situation where a broker is profiting by moving around the assets of its ongoing clients. And that is not this case. This was an out-and-out sale of accounts, and there is nothing about the structure of this transaction, about the sale of accounts, that raises any of the concerns of self-dealing that underlie the Evren decision. We briefly addressed the aiding and abetting claim against Harris Direct. I believe the Chancery Court appropriately dismissed this claim for two reasons. First, as I've just discussed, we do not believe the plaintiff can make out a claim for breach of fiduciary duty against Morgan Stanley, and in the absence of an underlying breach, there can be no claim for aiding and abetting. But secondly, this case is on all fours with In Re Telecommunications. All Harris Direct did in this case, like the defendant in In Re Telecommunications, is pay for an asset. That's Harris Direct's full extent of its connection to this case. It paid $106 million for Morgan Stanley's online account. There is not a single factual allegation to suggest that Harris Direct knowingly participated in any breach of fiduciary duty that may have taken place, and of course we submit that none did take place. So in a clear-cut Delaware law, plaintiff has failed to state a claim, and that claim for aiding and abetting was appropriately dismissed. In closing, Your Honors, I'd like to refer to a passage from the Chancery Court's opinion. It's on page 27, where the Chancery Court writes, imposing an unprincipled fiduciary duty on brokers who seek to sell their businesses would serve no useful purpose. At best, it would sharply diminish the value of brokers while generating no appreciable benefit to their customers. We believe that the Chancery Court was exactly right. That's why we respectfully submit that this court should affirm the dismissal of plaintiff's complaint.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Three very quick comments. Every time an account is sold by one brokerage house to another brokerage house, it's not a breach of fiduciary duty. What is a breach of fiduciary duty is when one brokerage house induces one of its customers or its customers in connection with the sale of its account that it transform, modify, or sell or buy securities that are in the portfolio of that customer's account. I think that is the confusion of Vice Chancellor Strang, and that's the confusion of the argument of the defendants. Two, the California brokerage cases that counsel refers to are all duty of care cases. The contract negates the duty of care that if, because this is an online brokerage business, that they only have the duty to faithfully execute the buys and the sells that come online. It has nothing to do with it, and there is no case that refers to, that I know of, in California, that refers to negating the duty of loyalty. According to the defendants, the mortgage Stanley or any brokerage house is free to take a bribe, is free to undermine its customers' accounts and keep the money. I don't think that that's the way the securities business is, should be, or the way the cases in California are. Evelyn and this case are identical. The critical fact is, no matter what the course of payment was, no matter what the course of the negotiations are, the critical fact is that there was an undisclosed payment for recommending a change of an investment. That's what Evelyn stood for, but you can't do that. That's what this case should stand for. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.
Please rise.